What's going on, LifeBridge? How are we?
Good.
Oh, I love it when you're pumped up. I know it's going to be a good day. I want to know, before we get going, I want to know who you got in the Super Bowl. How many of you are pulling and picking the 49ers? Any Niners people? Okay. Did I catch a boo in there too? All right. How many of y'all are picking the Chiefs? Okay. How many of you could care less and didn't even know who's in the Super Bowl until right now? Okay, see, I don't know how to respond to that. It kind of bothers me. I'm a football guy. My Colts aren't in it, and praise God the Patriots aren't either. So, see, there. Now we can be unified. Don't boo me on that. But I just want to see a good name. Here's my pick. I'm picking the Chiefs. I think the 49ers are great. I think they've got a great defense, a stellar run game. I just don't think you can shut down Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense for four quarters. And I know that's why you came to church today, for football analysis from your lead pastor, but I can't help myself. But watch what's going to happen today. It's going to come down to something completely different. Forget the quarterbacks. Forget who's got the best offensive line. Forget who's got the best defense. Watch the game come down to a single play made by a single player that nobody is talking about on any of the pregame shows. Like none of the, we're clapping for that. All right, there we go, yeah. Somebody's relative is on the team. They're just hoping for play time today, right? Like nobody knows this person's name. They're considered insignificant. Maybe it's an undrafted rookie tight end. Maybe it's a guy who has shown a ton of potential in his past, but just made some dumb off-the-field decisions, and now he's kind of worked his way back. Maybe it's a guy that's on, a third stringer that just gets thrown into the game because of injuries. Somebody that nobody knows their name, everybody is considering them insignificant, can't have a meaningful impact on the game because this game's going to come down to the starters and the stars, not the backups and the guys we don't even know their names. But whenever this happens, whenever you see somebody step up in a game where we don't even know who they are, and they contribute in a way that just changes the course of the game, man, that's awesome. We love stories like that. The underdog, the true underdog. Great stories. We love people like that. We might see a story like that tonight in the game. I hope that we do. But we're definitely going to hear a story about that right now. Like somebody that was considered completely insignificant. Honestly, they were considered worthless because of their past. They couldn't do anything meaningful. And yet they had an astounding impact on the mission. So if you're new, let me kind of catch you up on what we're doing in this series and why. Maybe you know Jesus well. Maybe you do. Maybe you know a little bit about Jesus. Maybe that Jesus and this whole church thing is brand new to you. That entire spectrum is covered in this room right now. So wherever you're at, you're in good company. But one thing that I think is pretty universal, or at least it can be, is that it's really easy for us to become, or maybe we have in the past, been skeptical about Jesus, about the Bible, because of the people that are in it just seem too good to be true. It's really easy to believe that Jesus, the Bible, this is all great, but these stories are made up to make Jesus look good, or they're meant to drive an agenda somewhere. Like, I've thought that before. Like, that's been my opinion at different times, and I'm guessing that most of us have shared that sentiment at some time. Maybe you're wrestling with that right now. Jesus, the Bible, the church, man, this is all just made up. It's just to make Jesus look good, or it's meant to drive some kind of agenda. I know there's a hidden agenda here somewhere that's pushing forward. Or the church, this is completely irrelevant to me in 2020. Like nothing in here, nothing in the Bible can relate to me, so like this is all pointless. You know, if that's where you're at, let me just say this. Jesus' story starts off with his genealogy. That kind of sounds lame. It does. I mean, it actually honestly sounds like it reinforces the irrelevant argument. Like, why would you start off that way unless you're into things like Ancestry.com? Nobody cares about that. It just seems lame. It seems to reinforce this is all irrelevant. Well, not if you dive into it. If you dive into the stories that make up Jesus' genealogy, there's two things that jump out, at least to me. Number one, there's rough stories and rough people in his family tree. There's some cool stories too, absolutely. There's some people in there that are extremely admirable, but there's also murder and corruption and adultery and illegal activity, just to name a few things that are in his family tree. So if this is yours, this is your genealogy, you're not too excited about it. At family reunions, there would be a lot of gossip about people in the family, but outside of that, you wouldn't want to talk about your family very much. If Jesus was running for office this year, he would have a lot he needs to explain when it came to his family. His family would compromise him. His opponents would have a field day at the debates just exposing his family. Forget foreign policy and the economy. They would just talk about what happened at his family reunions. Jesus would have a lot to answer for. So if you're just making this all up, if this is here to drive some kind of agenda, then why would you start off the hero story by airing out all of his family's dirty laundry? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. At the very least, you would fill it with heroes and feel-good stories, not the train wreck that you see in Matthew 21. On top of that, these real and raw stories, they're relevant to us today because they're completely relatable. There's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new under the sun. The same stuff that happens in these stories is stuff that happens today. That means they're relevant today because they're relatable. So far, we've looked at a scared teenage girl. We've looked at a selfish patriarch. We've looked at a solid leader who ends up getting engulfed in his own pride. And we looked at a disregarded foreigner. Do those things still happen today? Yeah, absolutely they do, on a daily basis. That makes this relevant because it's relatable. And then today we're going to look at an overlooked player who ends up making the Hall of Fame. So Matthew 1:5 says this. This is Jesus' genealogy. And Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. And Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth. And Obed the father of Jesse. Jesse the father of King David. So Rahab, she's the mother of Boaz, the mother-in-law of Ruth. And she's the great-great-grandmother of King David. Now, those are some pretty legit names. Boaz, Ruth, David. Those names carry a lot of weight and did some really impressive things. So what's Rahab's story? What's her story? Well, it starts at the same time when the Israelites were about ready to finally head into the promised land. Here's what was going on. The Israelites had been enslaved, and they were slaves in Egypt for 400 years. Like, awful slavery, 400 years. Well, God finally calls Moses to lead Israel out of slavery, lead them out of this mess and into the promised land that he promised Abraham centuries ago. He does all of this cool stuff, and he does these miraculous things to lead them out, and then they get out of Egypt, and the Israelites, in response, they decide that they wanted to complain a lot. And then they rebelled against God multiple times, which meant they ended up wandering in the desert for 40 more unnecessary years. Well, that 40-year period is finally over. Moses has died. Joshua has taken on his place as the leader. Now they're finally ready to enter into the promised land, which means they got to go to war. They got to fight some serious battles. One of the very first ones would have been at a place called Jericho. Jericho was a city that had to be conquered or they could not enter the promised land. Rahab is a citizen of Jericho. So I'm going to read you the majority of her story. This is in Joshua chapter 2, so stick with me on this. Then Joshua secretly sent out two spies from the Israelite camp at Acacia Grove. He instructed them, scout out the land on the other side of the Jordan River, especially around Jericho. So the two men went out and came to the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there that night. But someone told the king of Jericho, some Israelites have come here to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, bring out the two men that have come into your house, for they have come to spy out our whole land. Rahab had hidden the two men, but she replied, yes, the men were here earlier, but I don't know where they came from. They left at dusk when the gates were closed. I don't know where they went. If you hurry, you can probably catch them. Actually, she had taken them up on the roof and hid them beneath bundles of flax that she had laid out. So the king's men went looking for the spies along the road leading to the shallow crossings of the Jordan River. As soon as the king's men had left, the gate of Jericho was shut. Before the spies went to sleep that night, Jericho went up to them on the roof to talk with him. I know, it's confident, I know the Lord has given you this land, she told them. We are all afraid of you. Everyone in the land is living in terror, for we have heard how the Lord made a dry path for you through the Red Sea when you left Egypt, and we know what you did to Sihon and Og, the two Amorite kings east of the Jordan River, whose people you completely destroyed. No wonder our hearts have melted with fear. No one has the courage to fight after hearing such things, for the Lord your God is supreme. God of heavens above and God of the earth below, now swear to me by the Lord that you will be kind to me and my family since I've helped you. Give me some guarantee that when Jericho is conquered, that you will let me live along with my father and my mother, my brothers and sisters and all their families. We offer our own lives as a guarantee for your safety, the men agreed. If you don't betray us, we will keep our promise and be kind to you when the Lord gives us the land. Then, since Rahab's house was built into the town wall, she let them down by a rope through the window. Escape to the hill country, she told them. Hide there for 3 days from the men searching for you. Then, when they've returned, then you can go your own way. Before they left, the men told her, we will be bound by this oath that we have taken only if you follow these instructions. When we come into the land, you must leave this scarlet rope hanging from the window through which you've let us down. And all of your family members, your father, mother, brothers, and all of your relatives must be here in the house. If they go out into the street and are killed, it will not be our fault. But if anyone lays a hand on them inside this house, we will accept the responsibility for their death. If you betray us, however, we are not bound by this oath in any way. So here's what ends up happening. The Israelites, they march around Jericho for 7 days. They do exactly what God told them, and then the wall falls down. They conquer the city. You can read all about that in Joshua. They conquer the city, and they save Rahab. They make good on their promise to her because Rahab was faithful to her promise. She changed her allegiance to God's people and to God. That's what faithful means. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Sometimes faith or being faithful, we think that that just means blind belief. It's not what it means. To be faithful, to have faith in something means your allegiance is attached to that. That's what you're loyal to. Well, Rahab showed that her allegiance was to God and his people, so they made good on their promise to her. Rahab's entire family gets saved. Her entire family lives with her in safety just outside Israel's camp for the rest of her life, and then Rahab goes on to be a part of Jesus' family tree. Great story. Here's why it's a great story. It's because we see that God works through people that others reject. God works through people that others reject. Rahab was a pagan prostitute. She would have been considered worthless, completely insignificant at best. Rahab had no value. She wasn't worth saving, let alone serving. In fact, the only sliver of value that Rahab would have had would have just been with the men who were her customers. That's it. And yet God uses her to fulfill his promises. God uses her to continue to write his story of redemption that's all pointing to Jesus. Rahab ends up making the Hall of Fame. I don't know if you know this or not, but there's a Hall of Fame in the Bible. Hebrews chapter 11 is a long list of all stars in the Bible. People that did incredible things, God used them to do incredible things just because of their faithfulness. Rahab is listed in that chapter. Chapters referred to sometimes, you might hear somebody call it the Hall of Fame or the Hall of Faith chapter in the Bible. Rahab's there because of what she did, because of her faithfulness. And yet Rahab would have missed out on this whole story. She wouldn't have been a part of it. She wouldn't have got to be a part of God's plan of redemption. She wouldn't have been a part of Jesus' line. She wouldn't have made the Hall of Fame if she would have believed a lie that existed then. And the same lie is very, very much alive and well today. Again, I just wonder, like, this lie, how much damage has this particular lie caused? How much potential has just been wasted? How many people have been taken out of the game, taken themselves out of the game because of this lie that Rahab heard in her day, and we still hear it today? Here's the lie. You have no value because of your past. You've got no value because of what's been done to you, what you've said, what you've done. You can't contribute. You can't have an impact. You have no value. So it's better for you just to sit on the sidelines with your mouth shut and not complain. It's one of the greatest lies that exists in the world. And it flies in the face of God. God works through people that others reject. You may be rejected by the world because of your story, what's happened to you, or what you've done, or what you're even a part of right now. You might be rejected by the world, but that's not how God works. God works through people that others reject. In fact, he specializes in it. Rahab, case in point. But Rahab would have missed it all. She wouldn't have been a part of Jesus' family tree. She wouldn't have been a part of the redemption. She wouldn't have made the Hall of Fame if she would have believed that lie that she had no value because of her past or what she was involved with in the present. She would have missed it. The lie that says that the world says you're rejected and there's nothing you can do about it, so you might as well just move along. Like, you will experience rejection in life. You will. All of us probably have already experienced rejection multiple times. You will again at some point. Like rejection in a relationship. Rejection for a job or promotion. Years ago, I got rejected for a job that I thought I was the best candidate for, that I really wanted. And it didn't get it. It was thrown in my face. Like, that hurt. It still stings. Rejection in school. Rejection on a sports team. Still remember when I got cut from the 9th grade basketball team? That still stings, but I'm not bitter. That's why I go all out when I still play. I'm still trying to make that 9th grade team. You can pray for me on that. All right, okay. Rejection from a girl. Rejection when Kelly didn't want to go on a date with me. True story. Look who got the ring, though, in the long run. Persistence, boys. That's the key right there, persistence. I mean, you're going to face rejection in life. Like, rejection will define an experience that you have, but rejection doesn't define you. It's not your identity. That's not your identity. Don't believe the lie that says, because of your story, your identity is a reject. If you believe that lie, then all that lie is going to do is discourage you to the point where you can't see the truth that God wants you, that he still wants to write a story through you, that he still wants you a part of his story, his kingdom. Yeah, our world is full of rejection, right? We live in a world of rejection. That's true, right? But God's kingdom, there are no rejects in God's kingdom. People the world would define as rejects today, those are the people that Jesus made a beeline to. There are no rejects in God's kingdom. You know how I know that's true? The cross. Jesus didn't die for people that he identified as rejects. He died for people that he loves, people that he views and identifies as sons and daughters. My sons, my daughter will always have a place. They will always have a role. They will always have a part to play in our family story. And they will always, always, always be loved by me. No matter what happens, no matter what they do, they will always be loved by me. It's the exact same thing with God. He loves you. Jesus has given you intrinsic value and immeasurable worth. The world may define you as a reject, but Jesus looks at you as a son or daughter that he loves and wants to write a story through you if you would let him. No matter what your past is, you still have value. Don't believe the lie. One of the things that I think is really cool about Rahab's story is that she contributed in a way that she could. So many of us, it's so easy for us to get wrapped up in trying to be someone or something that we're not. Rahab didn't try to do that. She just contributed the way that she could. It's easy for us to look at this person over here and what they're doing and think, that's more important. That's more valuable. That's more impressive. That's more lucrative. I guess I should be like that person. I guess I should try to do what they're doing, even though we might not have the ability. Like, sorry to break it to you, if you don't have the talent or the gifts, like, don't try to be something you're not. Or maybe we're not even called to do that. But we want to do that. We get caught up in trying to do and be what we think is more important. I wrestle with this. I don't know about you. Maybe I'm the only one. I wrestle with this. I see these people over here and think, wow, that's great what they're doing. That's probably more impactful. That's more impressive. I want to do that. Or see these people over here and what they're doing. Wow, that's so much more valuable than what I'm doing. I should try to be like them. Man, I've wrestled with that a lot. Especially like as a pastor, very much so. See, I've got friends that are pastors. Well, they're writing books. I guess I should write books. Well, these pastors over here, they're starting podcasts. I guess I should do a podcast. Those are great things. I benefit from those things. But that's not what God's called me to do. That's not who he's asking me to be right now. That's not the purpose he's given me. But it's really easy for me to look at other people and think that's better than what I'm doing. That's more important than what I'm doing. And I try to do that. At the heart of it, let me just pull back the curtain with me. At the heart of it, my motivation is because I want people to think that I'm impressive. I do. I've wrestled with this my whole life. I probably will my entire life, having this internal battle that I want people to think I'm great. I want them to be impressed with me. So if I do things that are impressive and admirable, that means that people will define me as impressive and admirable. And here's what I've learned from this. When I'm trying to be impressive, it's very, very easy for me to start playing the comparison game. I can start comparing myself to other people. And here's I believe this is a universal truth about that. When you start playing the comparison game, all that is self-inflicted discouragement. It's all it is. Just you're inviting discouragement onto yourself. And you miss out. Whenever I've chased after things that I think are more impressive and more valuable and more important, what ends up happening is I miss out on the purpose God has for me. I've done that more than once. Come to find out, whatever God's purpose for me is far more fulfilling than anything else I could do anyway. If you're trying to be someone that you're not, if you're trying to do something that you think is better or more important than what God's asked you to do or equipped you to do, you're gonna miss out on real purpose. And whatever that purpose that God has for you is far more fulfilling than anything that you could replace it with. It just is. Rahab, she contributed in an incredibly purposeful way that had great impact. And what was really cool, she was probably the only one that could contribute in that way. So Rahab is the only one that could take two strange men into her house and nobody in the city would ask questions about it. If two strange dudes walk into anybody else's house in the city, they're like, what's up with those guys? And they're checking things out, something's up. Not Rahab, they're thinking what? Customers. She's got a cover. Because of what she did, she had an incredible pulse on the city. So she gave invaluable intel to the spies. Her house just happened, coincidentally, note my sarcasm, her house happened to be built into the outside wall where she could let them escape through a window in her house easily outside of the city. She knew where people would go search for the spies, so she said, don't go this way, go that way. They'll look for you for 3 days, so hide for 3 days over there, and then after 3 days, you're fine, go your own way. The spies would have been lost without Rahab, and Rahab was the only one that could have done stuff like that. She gave them intel. She helped them escape. She helped them avoid capture. It's pretty cool. We could also look at it and say, well, it's really not that big of a deal. I mean, she didn't lead a charge. She didn't fight in some battle. She didn't do something that was so impressive that one day it would turn into a movie script. We could say it that way, but what Rahab did was critical. It was mission critical. If she didn't do that, it wouldn't have happened. Jericho could have still been standing. And it's exactly what God had purposed for her to do. So for you and I, contribute to the mission in the way that you can. You have been given unique abilities and talents and resources and gifts and experiences to contribute to the mission and move it forward. Jesus laid out the mission in Matthew 28. That we want to introduce as many people as we possibly can to Jesus. We want to help people grow in Jesus. We want to see the world transformed by the gospel, and every single one of us has a role to play in that mission. No one role is more important than the other. Nothing is more important than the other. Get that out of your head. It's really easy to get caught up in that. This is more impressive. This is more important. But it's not. God could care less about what we think is impressive. God's not worried about impressiveness. He's worried about faithfulness. In his mission, purpose comes from faithfulness, not prestige. So whatever role that you have, contribute in that way. Contribute into the mission in the way that you can. And if you don't know what that is, if you don't know how to do that, get connected with people that are contributing, that are in the game, that are seeking after mission. Because when you're connected to them, when you're rubbing shoulders with them, they're gonna call things out in you that you didn't know was there yourself. Now, this has happened to me multiple times in my life. Or just connected to my church and serving in any way that I can, where I see a hole, I wanna connect there and I'll serve there. And I've had people call things out in me. Like, Matt, I think God might be calling you to do this. Come to find out years later, that was prophetic. They were absolutely right. Or Matt, I see this gift in you that I didn't know was there. I was connected with them in serving in any way that I could. And because I was there, they saw something and they said something. Put yourself in a position here for people to say something to you. But if you're just a consumer, it's never gonna happen. It'll never happen. Like if we just all show up here every week, Thursday night service or our services on Sunday morning. If we just come in, show up, come in, sit down for about an hour or so, and then take off, consume what happens here, and then leave, it will never happen. You'll never know where you're supposed to be, how you can contribute, what God might be calling you to do. You'll miss it. Like, this is just one of the many reasons why I tell you, get connected to a serving team here. Be serving. Because here's what's going to happen. Number one, you bring value to the table. Every single one of us can move the ball forward, can make an impact, no matter what role you serve in here. Because every single thing that we do, every single thing that we do has an intention behind it. There's purpose behind it. You can have an impact. Number two, serving is one of the greatest ways to grow. You will grow far more by serving than you will in any other way. It's just like you eat a steak and then you sit down and don't do anything with it. What's going to happen if you just eat and don't do any kind of exercise? But man, eat a steak and then go to the gym and work that protein out, put it to use. The same thing is true here. Man, when you start working out what you're consuming, you grow, you get stronger, and other people benefit from it. If you're serving, if you're connected through that way, you will develop connections and community here better than anyone else. The most connected people at LifeBridge, the people that have the most community here, I guarantee you they're people that have been serving here for a while. And they know people that way. And then last, and if you're serving, people will call stuff out in you that you don't even know is there. I promise you that will happen. But it's also really easy to make excuses why not to. Totally get it, man. Excuses why not to serve. Man, I don't have enough time. I don't really know what to do. I don't know where I would be help. I'm a little uncomfortable with that. Or I tried one time and this person didn't call me back. I get it. There's excuses for days. But let me just say this. Excuses, they're great robbers of purpose. They lead you away. They're great robbers of purpose. Can I say something and just be really direct? I mean, I'm gonna say it anyway. I just thought I'd ask your permission. That's a nervous laugh. I love that. Be an example, not an excuse. Be an example, not an excuse. I mean, this church has now 129 years behind it. It's got 129 years of people being examples, not excuses. Here in these four walls and out in that community. I was at a breakfast this week for pastors in the surrounding area about what's gone on in the community in the past 10 years and what's going on, what's coming. And out of all these churches, you know the only church that was named by name by one of the speakers? LifeBridge, for what we've done. Now, and here's the thing. That was all before my time. I can't take credit for any of that. That's you all. Y'all have been examples. 129 years of examples. I told you, if you were here last year when I said this, we're at 129 years old. Vision I've got for this place is that we would make it to 229. And none of us in this room will ever get to experience that. The only way we get to 229 is if we keep being examples, not excuses. The second we start making excuses is the second we get complacent and we start the clock on this church. The end date is coming at that point. Step up and be an excuse, or an example, not an excuse. And when you do that, people will also follow your lead. When you step out in faithfulness, step away from excuses, people will watch you. You're going to move the ball forward. You're going to have an impact. You're going to experience fulfillment and purpose that you're going to have. But people are going to see you, and they're going to say, I want to do that too, and they're going to follow your lead. They're going to step away from excuses. They're going to step out in faithfulness, and that grows and grows and grows and grows, and the mission goes further and further and further. Rahab, she had plenty of excuses, plenty. But she stepped out and was an example and contributed. Why? Well, she tells us why. She says exactly why. In verse 10, she says this, for we have heard, like we have heard how the Lord made a dry path for you through the Red Sea when you left Egypt. We heard about God. We heard about what God did for you. We heard about the insane thing where he parted the Red Sea and y'all walked across it away from the Egyptian army on dry land. We've heard about who God is and what he's done for you. That's the key right there. We heard. So my question, if you're a follower of Jesus or you call LifeBridge home, I have one question for you today. Have people heard about Jesus and what he's done from you? Have they heard about what he's done in your life? Have they heard about how he's moved? Have they heard about how he rescued you from the slavery of sin and forgave you and gave you grace? Have people heard about Jesus from you? Romans 10:14 says this, But how can they call on him to save them unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him if they've never heard about him? And how can they hear about him unless someone tells them? And how can anyone go and tell without being sent? That is why the scriptures say, how beautiful are the feet of messengers who bring good news. We have the best news the world has ever been given or ever will be given. That Jesus Christ came and died for all of mankind to forgive them from sin and then rose from the dead 3 days later so that he can offer us grace, forgiveness, redemption, purpose, and eternal life. But, they will never believe that news unless they hear it from you. They'll never believe it. If people heard about Jesus from you, if they heard about Jesus through your story, have they heard about Jesus by the way you live your life? Have they heard about Jesus by the way you serve, by the way you show hospitality? Have they heard about Jesus by your generosity? Have people heard about Jesus and what he's done from you? Now, Rahab risked it all. She risked it all. She could have been killed for what she did. She's committing treason. If you commit treason in the United States, what's the penalty? Death. You commit treason, death. It's black and white. That's what she's doing here. She risked everything. She risked her own life for a God that she barely knew, but it was a God she heard about. It was a God she heard about. It's really hard for people to respond in faith to Jesus if they've never heard about him, if they've never heard about what he's done, if they've never heard about how he's pursuing that individual. Don't make the assumption that somebody doesn't want to hear about Jesus or won't respond to them based on their circumstances or their past or their attitudes. That's not your job. Don't judge that. Don't judge what you think someone's response is going to be. That's not your job. Your job is also not to convert. Your job is just to tell. Rahab, you could have made an assumption about her that she had no desire to hear about Jesus or hear about God. She's not going to respond. She's a pagan prostitute. She's not going to respond. She doesn't care. Let's just move on to the next person. Could have been really easy to think that about Rahab. But when she heard, she responded in faith. Don't make the assumption that somebody doesn't want to hear or won't respond just because of their circumstances, what you see going on the outside. Don't do that. How many people would respond in faith, but they're not because either we're too afraid to tell them and show them, or we've just assumed that they don't want to hear and they're not going to respond anyway, so let's just move on. There's people in your life right now. I promise you, there are people in your life right now, and there are people that you are crossing paths with that just need to hear. Are you willing to tell them? Are you willing to show them? Like, what kind of story, what kind of purpose? Just imagine, just dream for a second. What kind of story and purpose does God have for those individuals? And it's just waiting to start. It's waiting to start once you tell them about Jesus. Collectively, what if we were all not afraid to do that? Don't be the guy on Main Street with a bullhorn and a poster board. That's not what I'm talking about. And if you're doing that and I see you, I will pull over. I'm just talking about people you got in a relationship with. The people that are in your life right now. People you're crossing paths with. Step up and be an example, not an excuse. Let's see what God will do. We got a few thousand people that call LifeBridge home. What happens if all of us are doing that? Kind of movement would start. The church, this place, we're just one small church that represents the entire church of Jesus Christ. This church and the church at large is meant to be a movement. We're not supposed to be stagnant consumers. A movement that's got a mission. We're never going to see finished. Not until Jesus comes back. But we're called to get after it. I don't know about you, but I want to be a part of a movement. And I want to see what God would do for people that are faithful, that have their allegiance to him, that aren't afraid to step out, drop excuses, and get after it. There's a verse in Proverbs 24:10. This is a verse that beats hard on my heart. I wasn't planning on talking about this at all, so I have no idea where this is going to go. It just talks about rescuing people that are stumbling to death and standing up for people that are being led to the slaughter. that if your strength is weak in the day of adversity, then you're weak. This hits my heart hard. There's people that are stumbling to the slaughter every day out there. Might even be people in this room right now. I'm not okay with just standing by and being a consumer of whatever makes me comfortable and okay. I can't do that with a good conscience and know that's happening, because Jesus isn't okay with that. He didn't go to the cross for me to just sit back and be relaxed. He went to the cross to save me and then use me as he saves other people. He did the exact same thing for you. Will it be hard? Absolutely. Good grief, yeah, absolutely. You step out and do hard things, you step out into faithfulness, it's going to bring tension. It's going to bring uncertainty. For sure it is. It's going to hurt at times. That's a good sign that you're on the right track at that point. So I hope you will join me, and I also hope that you will keep me accountable, because I want to be a part of the movement. And at least 5 people do. So that's good. We're starting, right? I love it when you guys do that. Y'all still don't know if you can respond to me or not, do you? Like, yes, please. And that makes me feel like I'm not alone. Thank you. All right, cool. We're in this. I promise you it'll be worth it, though. I promise you it'll be worth it. It will be hard, but it will be worth it. 12 months from now, if we step out, there are going to be people sitting in these chairs that aren't here right now, that have given their life to Christ, and now God's using them to reach other people also. And if you're a part of that, not only will you get to see the joy, how cool is it seeing people baptized, right? Have you ever noticed, again, I'm going way off on a trail here, so sorry, I'll wrap it up here in a second. This is why I get a mic, so I just get to go. Have you noticed that hardly ever you see a pastor in there baptizing people? Have you noticed that? That's very intentional. If you're going to get baptized and you ask me to baptize you, that's a huge honor and I want to do that. I'm keeping myself and the rest of the staff is keeping themselves out of it on purpose, because we want people that have been influential in someone's life to be the one baptizing them. The mission, Matthew 28, like I talked about earlier, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them all I've commanded you to do. Well, if you've led someone to Christ, if you've been an example and got rid of the excuses and stepped out, and they've heard about Jesus from you, and then they ask you to baptize them, I want you to have that honor. I want you to have that. They're going to remember you more than they're going to remember me when they're at their baptism. I want to see more baptisms, and I'm saying this even though I don't want it. I hope I'm never in the tank this year, because it's you all. I hope we see, last year, 2019, we had double the amount of baptisms than we did in 2018. That's amazing. I hope we double it again this year, and I hope I don't ever get wet. As much as like I want to be in there. It needs to be you all, okay? It needs to be you all. Step out. I'll step out with you, and you can keep me accountable. Matt, you look like you're getting complacent. You look like you're consuming. You look like you're taking it easy. What do you really, you can keep me accountable. I'm going to do the same with you, all right? But let's be examples. No more excuses. Let me pray. God, thanks for your story. Stories like this, first and foremost, we get to know you more. That's just what we want. We just want to know the God of the universe that created us and loves us. Father, give us the courage to step out and to be examples. And would you just, you've done this for 129 years. Would you just keep doing this for another 100 years? That you would use LifeBridge all over these communities, Northern Colorado and the rest of the country. The people have heard about God because of what you've done at LifeBridge. We ask that you would do that through our church. That brings fear, that brings tension, that brings change, that brings pain. I get it. It's not rainbows and butterflies, but we want that. That's fulfilling. We know that gives you glory, and we know that's what you want to do. Give us the courage to get out of the way and step up the way you would. And I pray that we would all just encounter Jesus a little bit more each day as we follow you in this. We love you. It's in Jesus' precious name. Amen.